Take a guess. How many species of plants and animals do you think are at risk of disappearing forever? I'll give you a moment as we introduce this next segment. Early Monday morning, 3:30 in the morning, representatives from around the world agreed to a historic deal to protect nature. This is complicated, but it falls under what scientists call biodiversity. And one key goal approved is called 30 by 30, protect 30% of the Earth's land and water by the year 2030. Okay, here's your answer. About 1 million species, give or take, are believed at risk of mass extinction, according to a UN report. We're joined now by Benji Jones. He's covering this meeting in Montreal for Vox, where he is an environmental reporter. Benji, hello.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
It's going well. I want to get your thoughts on the scale of this crisis. But first, this deal struck early Monday morning. You were in the room. It's been called historic by many. Historic how?
I think it is appropriate to call it historic because we haven't really seen an agreement that has such high ambition and so many targets to try to halt and reverse biodiversity loss by 2030, which is just 8 years away. And it includes these major targets. I mean, if you just look at the target 30 by 30, which you mentioned, we've never had a land or water conservation target that big before, certainly not one that becomes an agreement that 196 countries around the world are all aiming for. So just that target alone is enormous, but there are a bunch of other ones related to corporate responsibility, restoration, subsidies, and it just goes on and on. And there are 23 of them. So it really is incredibly ambitious.
But here's the thing, Benji. I understand this agreement is not binding, and we know countries often fall short of their targets for these kinds of things. So where's the real motivation here for these 190-plus countries?
Along with this framework, this deal with targets, there's a monitoring framework as well, which is essentially they're going to be measuring progress, and then countries will hold each other accountable. You'll have the civil society, nonprofits also doing assessments and holding these countries accountable as well. And then I think one other point to mention is just that the finance sector is more involved in biodiversity conservation than ever before. I think they're starting to get worried that investments might be at risk because of declines in nature. So if they're invested in a company that requires pollination from insects and insects are in decline, like that could affect the investors. Mm-hmm. And so just seeing this interest from the financial sector, which really like money is power, money moves people to do things. I think that is really helping motivate people to be like, okay, we actually need to abide by these targets.
Oh, I see. I mean, similar to climate change, right? These big Wall Street money managers are seeing that as financial risk in certain sectors.
Exactly. That's right.
Okay. You know, as these things go, so often the biggest question is who pays for all this? I mean, this will cost tens of billions of dollars at least, right?
Yeah, that's right. So there's this one number that's thrown around all the time. When you're in this meeting, and this is what produced this kind of historic agreement that we're talking about, you hear this number, $700 billion, come up a lot. And it is the gap in financing necessary to conserve nature. It comes from this report in 2020. This report is saying that countries need to come up with $700 billion to actually conserve nature into the future. That's an enormous number. This agreement did not get close to that, but there were big numbers in this deal for nature. And the headline figure is $200 billion a year by 2030. And then one of the most contentious topics in this conference and really in any environmental negotiation is how much money are developed countries, so the richer nations often in the West, going to pay developing countries to meet some of these targets because they have fewer resources, yet they're some of the most biodiverse rich countries in the world. So there was back and forth for a long time with how much money is going to go into this fund for developing countries, basically foreign aid. And that number is $20 billion by 2025 each year, and then $30 billion by 2030. And that's also annual. It's pretty significant. Again, it's not closing the gap necessary, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah, right. And as you say, these emerging economies, say Indonesia, Brazil, are where the biggest rainforests are. So this really matters as for where money is going to go to those countries. I want to ask you, Benji, to step back here a lot and just help the rest of us understand what's at stake here. In a Vox podcast, you interviewed author Michelle Nyhaus about her book, Beloved Beasts, Fighting for Life in an Age of Extinction. And here's a little bit of that conversation.
We can't save everything. There are going to be more extinctions. You know, some of the bad news will come to pass and is coming to pass, but that doesn't mean all is lost.
So Benji, give us an illustration from your reporting to bring this all home for us as far as how you see what's at stake here.
We all can imagine the cute animals, the pandas, the tigers, the animals we might interact with on walks. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe we don't think as much about just all of the ways that we are so dependent on nature and on wildlife. I was just talking to the head of the Worldwide Fund for Nature, also known as WWF, the largest environmental organization, and he was telling me about just the importance of respecting and thinking about some of the lesser known species like moths. Like, moths are major pollinators. We depend on them for literally sustenance, like to survive with food. So I think the point I'm trying to make is that there are so many ways in which we need healthy ecosystems for our own sake. So even if we don't have like a love, an inherent love for nature, you don't love the outdoors, hiking, whatever, your clothes come from plants, your food comes from plants, our water often comes from streams that are cleaned by vegetation in the riverbank. So there's just so many examples like that. And then we also know that just over the summer, there were massive heat waves, and some of the only relief you can get if you live in cities is these small chunks of grass and trees and so forth. So there's very clear benefits just for health as well. We also know that there are connections between deforestation and the spread of zoonotic diseases. So there are just so many linkages between the health of an ecosystem and the health of humans. And I think it's important to constantly be thinking about that connection beyond just like, oh, this is a cute animal, which of course is cool too.
Yeah. Benji Jones is senior environmental reporter at Vox. He's speaking to us from Montreal, where world representatives just reached a historic agreement on biodiversity. Benji, thanks for your work.
Thanks so much for having me.